All right, I think it's time to get things started. And our first presentation is Mary Ann Seidler from Tyline. Mary Ann has over 25 years' experience in the broadcast industry. Her current position is with Tyline Technology, where she is the Vice President for North American Sales. Mary Ann began her broadcast career on the air, a news and sports reporter. She eventually transitioned to the technical side of the business, developing a specialization in audio compression. She was one of a handful of expert listeners for the initial MPEG test that developed MP2 and MP3 as international audio coding standards. She has presented and published many papers on audio compression and was a longtime contributor to Radio World for her column on DAB Eureka 147. And finally, Mary Ann made an unusual contribution to our industry. The developers of MPEG-2 deemed her voice a codec buster. And as a result, her voice has been used by companies worldwide to test the robustness of their audio compression schemes. So today she'll be testing the robustness of our audio system. Here's Mary Ann Seidler.
Thank you very much. Okay, the codec buster thing, that was just completely a freak of nature, and I didn't even know about it until one year I was walking around IBC, and I heard my voice. I'd done some recordings a couple years previously for the guys at the IRT who developed MPEG-2, and I'm walking by, and I hear my voice, and I look in, and it's Microsoft doing this presentation on their new coding scheme, and I thought, what in the world? They literally were using a recording of me playing it to people, showing how they could actually deal with this codec buster voice, which was mine. I'm reading a new book that, for any of you that like rock and roll or Bruce Springsteen, I'd highly recommend it. How many people have seen this book? It's called Bruce. Excellent. It is about the life of Bruce Springsteen, but it deals a lot with just how he's recorded things. So there's a good technical part of it. I will never forget the day that, growing up in Omaha, Nebraska, a radio station played Born to Run. I pulled my car off to the side of the road, and I was just mesmerized. I just sat there and listened to it, and then immediately went over to the record store to buy it. I was mesmerized by it because it wasn't just that it was a cool song, it was how it sounded, sonically how it sounded, just the drum beat at the beginning. That's part of the magic of radio. That's part of the magic of what we can do. And my concern is that if we aren't careful with how we're using audio compression, part of that magic, part of what got me to pull over to the side of the road and listen to that song, we're going to inadvertently lose. And we don't have to. So let's work on getting it back. So let's just talk a little bit about where we were with this and where we've gone. In the early 1990s is when they came up with these standards for MPEG coding, which is kind of how the ball got rolling. MPEG-2 and MPEG-3 were chosen as standards after a lot of fighting. And then after a couple of years, both of the developers of MPEG-2 and MPEG-3, along with several radio groups in Europe, said, hey, you know, there's a little bit of a problem here with how people are using these codecs, so let's do some testing and see how well they perform after multiple layers of coding. And it was actually the guys at CBC, Canadian Broadcasting, who really brought this up. So we did a lot of listening tests, and they came up with some recommendations. These are the recommendations that they came up with for MPEG-2, which was really the standard, but this is also for MPEG-3 as well. You're really only supposed to use one encoding and decoding pass at 128 kilobits. Now, the guys at MPEG-2 and MPEG-3, especially MPEG-2, were going, well, no problem, because we're recommending everyone use it at 256 kilobits. Okay, that's great. The problem was that ISDN came along. And once ISDN came along, it became very easy to use it at 128. And that's how things kind of got started. Now, why are multiple passes of coding such a problem for these different algorithms? It has to do with the fact that they're perceptual coders. You know, basically what they do is anything below a certain threshold, they take it out because you can't hear it. So they just assume, well, we'll send the skeleton. But think of it this way, if you send a fax, okay, fine, the person who gets the fax, you know, can see it. What happens when you send 5 copies of that same fax? It's basically that's what happens to these coding schemes, is similar to a fax. Where the problem has really started, though, with a lot of radio stations, it isn't our fault. It's that we're getting more and more material that's pre-compressed. And it was never okay, but I could understand it in the 90s. I could understand it maybe in the early 2000s, but we don't need to be getting that now. And what we really need to do is reach out to these different groups who are sending us this material and either say to them, hey, there's a better way, or frankly, if we can, say, we're not accepting it this way anymore. And I know that seems like kind of a gutsy thing for us to be doing, because a lot of it is advertising agencies, but we have to at least educate them, because I really don't think they understand completely the ramifications of it. We're getting music that's all, oh, we're sending you an MP3. Oh, great. Okay, so it's already compressed before we're getting it. Commercials, if you think about it, commercials could have been already encoded and decoded twice before we're even getting them. But we do have some control, and this is where we can kind of start taking things back. We've got control in our stations as far as audio codecs, how we're sending, how much we're using them, what bit rates. And if we're using IP, come on, we can use much higher bit rates than 128. Smartphones, you know, there's coding in every single smartphone. So it depends on what you're using, and again, what bit rate you're using at. Different remotes. Again, as we transition to IP, we've got a real chance here to kind of take back our audio quality. Satellite feeds, I'm happy to say that automation systems have gone away from using MPEG-2, and a lot of them are going linear now, so at least we can check that one off. And even our remote studios. This is just, you know, this was never exactly how it was planned, but you can kind of see how this is cascaded, so we've got so many different places that we're using audio compression. This, I kind of reckon, is what a lot of facilities look like, that you've either got a news source or a sports source, and it may get sent from the news source. Let's just say we're a news station. Maybe you've got a reporter out in the field. He then sends that information to a bureau. That bureau maybe then disseminates the information to all the stations via satellite, and then it comes into your radio station. So look how many times you have a chance just in that little chain for it to be coded and decoded. It's a lot more than one time. And if you look at, this is a source, this is kind of a compression, what I kind of tracked is, this is what a typical audio chain starts looking like. The news source maybe is sending it at 128 kilobits in MP3 or MPEG-2. And just out of curiosity, how many stations here know if they're using MP3 for their audio codecs? Show of hands. No one? Yeah, see? How many people are using AAC? G722? Layer 2? Yeah, see, it's a that's the other thing, too. It's a mishmash. These coding schemes don't always really play well together, either. So if you send something in MPEG-2 and then you transcode it to MP3, you're going to have even more challenges along the way. So by the time it gets to the radio station, we've already sent it in 2 passes of coding at 128 kilobits, and then maybe we're going at 256, and then 2 more passes. It was never what was recommended. And that's why we start to have problems with the audio quality. So if you look at it, last Christmas I was driving along and I heard this Karen Carpenter song. And I thought, wow, is this some sort of reproduction of this Karen Carpenter song? Because I recognize somehow the voice, but this isn't her. And it was her, but it was a station that was obviously using so much compression that the whole mid-range of her voice was just gone. There was no depth in it. So someone sent me this. It's kind of hard to read. I'm happy to give anyone this presentation to use it. Basically, it says that whatever is on this label, if you've coded it several times, it will have absolutely no similarity to what the original sounded like. So I'm sure everyone in this room really cares about audio quality. But one thing I've also heard a lot of people say is, well, we care about audio quality, but you know what? Our listeners don't care. They don't care. They like MP3. Well, are we really sure about that? Remember this? Remember that feeling that Maxell's whole ad was based on, oh my God, the audio quality is great. But remember when AM radio first came out? Then FM radio came out, and a lot of us listened to it because it sounded so much better. And I see that starting to happen with younger people now. It's fancy to have headphones, but you see more and more ads based on audio quality, and it's starting to sneak up on us, which is a good thing for us. This is interesting. At first, when I read this, I thought, wow, why are they doing that? Why would they pay $30 million for this headphone company? Well, that was about a year ago. How many of you own a set of these? Okay. I'm always looking at people at airports. Go to any airport, look around malls. Oh my gosh, younger people buy these like crazy. So, you know, I saw them a few months ago in the airport. I saw a bunch of them standing around with these headphones. And I thought, I'm going to go ask these guys why they're wearing them. And I thought, maybe it's just a cool thing. You know, we all go through fads. So I asked them, why did you buy these headphones? And they said, because we like the audio quality, because it sounds better. And I thought, you know, somebody is shelling out good money. Sure, maybe it's a fashion statement, but there's something to it. They want something that sounds good. They care. And just if any of us really think that young people prefer MP3 audio, that's a myth. Harman actually did this double-blind listening test, so it was rather scientifically done. And the results were overwhelmingly that younger people chose the CD. They didn't choose MP3 as what they wanted to listen to. They kept choosing the original source material. And yes, CDs are coded, but certainly not to the extent of most MP3 files. So why do we really care? You know, isn't the big thing about radio that it's just easy, you know, to find? It's transportable. You can pick it up anywhere. Maybe we shouldn't care. But maybe we should. Because we've gone from this, where it was hard to tune another station in, and you really had to fiddle around with it. And once, you know, someone picked your station, they picked your station. To this, now suddenly we had this other competition, and just try going to buy a stereo system now. To this, oh my gosh, well, first of all, now it's too hard to turn us on because it's impossible to find the radio on the dial, but it's way too easy to turn us off. You have so many selections on these new radios in cars. If you look in radio, and every time I get a rental car, I'm just flabbergasted. It's satellite, it's Pandora, it's everything, and then it's us. So we're just one of several choices. We have to have some competitive edge, and the edge we can have over those guys is our audio quality. We can sound better than Pandora, and we can sound better than satellite radio. No offense to the satellite radio people, but FM radio, we can do a lot better. We just have to get together and decide we're going to do it. So this isn't a monumental task. It just takes a little kind of chipping away at it. And here's some suggestions I've got that I think are really solid suggestions. I've talked to different stations that have started kind of implementing this and just going through their chain and looking at stuff. And it's working. And at the very least, we've got people thinking about it. I talked to the people at Greater Media in Boston, and I was explaining this concept to them, and they said, oh, you know, the problem is we get all these ads and they come in MP3, and we, you know, we're a big station group, but we don't want to say we won't take your ad because we're concerned they're going to go someplace else. Well, what if we all start saying to the ad agencies, hey, you know what, you don't need to send these in ISDN. Your voiceover talent doesn't need to use ISDN. They can actually use IP, and you don't need to use MP3 at 128 kilobits. Really, you can move more towards linear audio, or at least use much less compression than you're using now. Draw up a plan. Just kind of see what your station is doing. So if you start drawing up a plan and figuring out exactly where you've got audio compression, then you can kind of address it. And then test your audio chain. Wisconsin is very lucky for many reasons. One of them is that you've got so many unbelievably great educational institutions here. And there's always some young person you can grab who would just love to probably come and do a little project at the station that they can put on their resume, that they could test your audio chain and they could test where you're using compression and probably do some samples. They walk away from it. They've got a great paper that they can hand in, and you can help test and see where you've got weak links or where you could probably improve your audio quality. And then insist on higher bit rates. Even with the, you know, with the ad agencies, I think if we can go back to them and give them good positive suggestions, it'll help. And if the more we can kind of educate them, the better off it'll be. I get a lot of calls from voiceover artists now that are kind of thinking about switching from ISDN to IP, but what they're telling me is, well, you know, we want to get work at these ad agencies, and they're all using MP3 at 128. You know, they're really far behind, and they'll always be far behind unless we kind of start pushing them. So we need to. It'll help them in the end because their ads will sound better. So insist on higher bit rates all along the way. Look at this, at the news source, that person no longer needs to use 128. They could up the bit rate, especially if they're going IP, which chances are, if they're not, they're going too soon. Minimize compression in your STLs. You know, you can go linear. Again, with IP, we can do so much more, and bandwidth has gotten less expensive, considerably less expensive. Now, remember the Ginsu knife commercials? There's always an added bonus. I was looking at this, and I was looking at my presentation, and I thought, you know, I think I'll add a little bit more to it. And I wanted to add a part that would, you know, just talk about all these compression schemes that are out there, because that's also part of the problem, but also tell you just a little bit about a new compression scheme that we've implemented, but several other companies have implemented. It's open source, and it again will help solve our problem of audio quality. So I'm going to go through some of these slides quickly. This is more, I would like to just give this to anyone who would like it. Oh my gosh, it's audio codec jambalaya out there. As you guys just proved, no one is using one type of codec, and that's also part of our problem that we're having. Look at this. When I've done it, I did this little informal survey of what stations are using. We still have a bunch of stations using G722. That's 7 kilohertz audio quality. You know, in the beginning, when we started this out, as many of us did, we were using G722, and that's it. That's all there was. At least we knew what we were doing. But we've completely driven off the road with this now. There's so many different types. And how we started getting there was with ISDN, 2 times 64 or 2 times 56. That starts working. And then we have POTS codecs. And now we have IP codecs, and they all have different types of issues. It is enough to make you want to pull your hair out. I just had to buy that slide. So, again, part of our problem is none of these things work together. How many of you guys have assumed that audio codecs would work together, even if they're from different manufacturers? Okay. Well, that isn't always the case. It should be. There's no reason it shouldn't be. But maybe we should talk. to each other. This is part of it, because, and this is why these ad agencies don't want to switch, because they've invested in one type of codec throughout their whole chain, and they can't make incremental improvements. But we can actually talk to each other. This slide, the next slide I'm going to skip through because it gives some technical information. But this, anyone who wants this, this will give you information about how these codecs can talk to each other, whether they're tie lines, whether they're comrecs, whether they're, you know, whatever. Yeah, I'm not going to read this. It's also these algorithms, though. Remember the little survey we did when I asked you what type of codec you use? Well, Akte Meine Güte, as they say in Germany, if you're using AAC, you may be using AAC, but there's so many different types of AAC, you have no way of knowing whether it's going to work together or not, or what it's for. These are just some of the different types. And again, this is more for people to take home. I have all this rattling around in my brain, I thought I would share it with people. So you've got a million different types of AAC, and they don't talk to each other. So you can see this. This is one of the tests they did on this. Then you've also got a coding delay, which you're dealing with, which is why there's so many different forms. So in conclusion, I'd like to talk to you about a problem. I know you've seen many of these ads on TV asking you whether you have certain medical problems. Are you or anyone at your station suffering from the following issues? Are the moods of your conversation cold? Are there frequent interruptions in your conversations? Do your conversations somehow seem offbeat, not quite right? Number one, either you've forgotten your wife's birthday, or you're suffering from delayuptus. It's serious. That's right. Delayuptus is caused by audio codecs, whether it's in your IP system or whether it's in your audio codec itself, that have too much delay, and the conversation is unnatural, and it doesn't sound good. So this is my little ad for this open standard, open source codec called Opus. Opus is an open source, hopefully habit-forming, low-delay, high-quality codec. Yes, our Opus users report having more natural conversations. The side effects include less cranky talent and less stressed-out engineers. Opus is designed to be used at very high bit rates or low bit rates. They've done a lot of tests with audio compression and multiple passes. It sounds rather good. It sounds much better than MP3, and it's a very low delay. These are some pictures. Anyone who wants those, that just gives you some of the listening tests that they've done. Listening tests, they're beating the pants off everybody else. Hey, as long as we're transitioning from ISDN and POTS to IP, why not really transition and let's get something that we can all talk to each other, no matter what brand we're using, and it sounds better for people. And that is the end of my formal presentation. It's a silent group thing. I do have a couple of audio samples that I can play for you, or if you just come and see me at the tie line booth, that would probably be better, and I'll play them and give you all the samples that you want that you can take back to your station, and we can start our little mission. Oh, wicked. Okay, so great. I'm going to play them. So on top of this, one other thing I'd like to add is, great, so I'm showing you all this stuff with audio compression, but now we have one other thing that we need to add into the mix, and that's audio processing. None of these clips have been sent through an audio processor like an Omnia. Now, once you do that, whatever problems and artifacts you're hearing, it's going to actually sound even worse. So that's something also to keep in mind. I know the guys, I see Mr. Fotai in the back of the room, And those guys have done a lot of research in that as well. So this one I thought is pretty good. It's Adele. And again, it's got a lot of percussion in it. And that really doesn't do well with audio coding. So I'm going to play a couple of clips of Adele. One is just with one pass, and one is actually at four passes. And what you want to, you know, I think you'll hear what it is.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark.
That sounds pretty bad. That's just 128. That's one time that someone has sent that. This is twice.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, and it's bringing me out the dark. Finally, I can see you crystal clear. Go ahead and sell me out, and I'll lay a ship bay.
Yeah, that's with two times 128. That's, and now think about that being sent through an audio processor. So all of that garbage is actually going to be, will sound even worse. So I've got a couple other.
ABBA.
This is with two passes. You hear the swirly tones around it? That's once you start recognizing what you're hearing. It's if you take away the audio part of it and you just listen to one channel, you'll hear all this squishing and smeary fun. Okay, obviously we know this doesn't sound good, but I'll play one more clip of ABBA. This is with three passes. That most of the people here wouldn't allow something like that on the air. But the other thing, too, is remember there are all these LPFMs coming up. And, you know, it's in all of our best interests that we get all radio stations to at least play good material. Because my fear is that instead of just switching from station to station, what if they say, ah, gosh, this is irritating? And then they just switch over to something else completely different. And it's not us. And I've got one more. So this one is at 256, and then we'll do one at 128. Actually, what I'll do is I'll play the original, and then I'm going to play it with phase out so you can hear what I was talking about with it.
Music for cello and orchestra by Leon Kirshner.
This is the original.
Born in Brooklyn, the son of an art embroiderer from Odessa. The soloist was Yo-Yo Ma, for whom the work was commissioned, and it was Court Mazur conducting the New York Philharmonic. Live from Avery Fisher Hall. This is Time Warner Presents the New York Philharmonic Live.
This is the next one. The next one is at 256, which isn't bad.
Music for cello and orchestra by Leon Kirshner. Born in Brooklyn, the son of an art embroiderer from Odessa. The soloist was Yo-Yo Ma, for whom the work was commissioned. And it was Court Mazur conducting the New York Philharmonic live from Avery Fisher Hall. This is Time Warner Presents the New York Philharmonic.
This is at 128.
Music for cello and orchestra by Leon Kirshner. Born in Brooklyn, the son of an art embroiderer from Odessa. The soloist was Yo-Yo Ma, for whom the work was commissioned. And it was Court Mazur conducting the New York Philharmonic live from Avery Fisher Hall. This is Time Warner Presents the New York Philharmonic live. This packed house at Avery Fisher Hall, it's a sold out house. getting a double helping of yo-yo Ma later.
So you can hear, if you heard that, number one, it just doesn't have the oomph of the original. The applause doesn't have the oomph. It's completely taking the life out of that recording. So I hope this inspires you to all go out and fight the good fight against overuse of audio compression. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? Yes.
Your last example was really good, and I can tell you, I know the person that does the broadcasts for New York Phil. He would freak if he heard that. He really would. My question, though, I realize this is a little off topic, but you alluded to it at the beginning of your presentation, the, shall we call it, codec buildup issue. And we have this within our stations, especially if we're doing HD. And to a point, there's not much we can do about it. Has there ever been any thought, idea, or whatnot of watermarking encoded material so that it stays encoded and doesn't get transcoded 20 times?
You know, I have heard people talk about that a long time ago. I haven't had anyone talk, unfortunately, it's a good point, and I haven't had anyone talk about it recently, and that's a pity, because what happens, oh my gosh, is number one, stations get stuff that's either MP3, or what people will do is they'll say, oh, well, actually, we're sending it as a WAV file, not realizing it actually has been coded and decoded once or twice, and they somehow think that by sending it then as a WAV to you, it magically undoes everything that's been done to it. So it's a good point. We're so far down the road, no one has talked about doing it in a while.
My question is, this new codec scheme, how do they look at the efficiency of the IP bandwidth? Because a lot of times on remotes, you're dealing with a certain amount of bandwidth. You can't get maybe the full, you know, kilobits per second you'd like to have. Are they looking at how efficient they can make the bandwidth?
Yeah, these guys, I saw them, I was with them last week in Canada, and it's an interesting little group. They're funded by Mozilla. And I asked them, this was kind of cool, I asked them, I said, well, why are you doing this? Because it's free. And they said, well, number one, we're trying to just spread this around. They were already the guys who did the Silk algorithm. They're using it for the betterment of all audio. And their whole dream is that eventually they want it so that at very low bit rates, you don't notice a delay, but it's also very good quality. So what they're trying to go for is extremely low bit rates. And knowing that with codecs and in different parts of the world, they're not going to get very much bandwidth. So that was one thing I know they were working on. They were also working on variable bit rates that it would change dynamically. So if you started losing the amount of bandwidth you had, that the codec would still continue on and just change. So, but that worried me a little because I thought, well, won't the delay change and won't that really throw talent off? You can turn that off, though. It doesn't have to be on. So, yeah, I know they're looking into it. And they're just at the start of this. And these guys, they don't have any experience in broadcasting, so we've kind of tried to introduce them to that. So now they're thinking of things a little bit differently.
Marianne, with HD radio, there is a fixed codec in place. Is there any optimal codecs to be used with HD radio? Any that work better?
I don't know. It's frankly, that's something I don't really work on. Actually, Frank, maybe you would know. Bodie, I see you in the back.
Folks,
calling up to the bullpen.
She'll be here all morning. Make sure you try the muffins. And so far as HD radio is concerned, Ubiquiti's kind of locked down the codec. Could there be a better codec? Well, how much time you got? and remember, it, in HD radio, comes down to how you, the broadcaster, choose to parse the data. You know, if you want to just use the whole 96 kilobits with the derivative of AAC, you'll get pretty decent sound performance. But most people today, they want to have multiple HD channels, so you've got to parse it down. So you really need to do a couple things. You need to make sure that you've conditioned the audio for that bit rate and get the maximum out of it, and that can be done with signal processing. That's item number one. And you know, there are algorithms out there now that will do their best to improve the transmission path, which is really what we do for AM, FM, television, things of that nature. But could you change the codec? That's a good question. And unfortunately, I don't have that answer because a lot of it Ubiquiti keeps as a black box. Any of us that deal in the transmission side, I know there's some of the guys here the next few days that are on the exciter transmission side, I think they just get like a module of DSP code, and that's it. You know, audio goes in, coded audio comes out. Although I did want to append something that Gordon was saying, and I'll make it quick. A number of years ago, there was the question about knowing what could be in the audio. A number of years ago, I did have a discussion with some of the guys at Fraunhofer, and they were going to embark upon a project that they were going to call Metadata for Radio. If the TV guys know what this is, because there's metadata with the digital digital signal. In radio, we could do the same thing, and we could tag the audio for a number of things. We could know about the dynamics in the audio, which would enhance the audio processor. We could also tag it to know what audio condition it's in. Is it linear? Is it coded? What bit rate? How many times? And then, like what Gordon was asking about, let's say it's been shrunk down to 256 or 128, and it's going down a path of the same nature, then subsequent devices downstream would just let it pass on through. If we had that ability, it would improve the entire system. Now, that said, to just do it as an ad hoc function basically doesn't get us anywhere because this type of technology has to be able to talk with everyone. Marianne, I don't know if I helped you or not, but
I'll give you I've got a toonie that I'll give you later for that. Thanks.
Folks, you'll be here for another few minutes, then you can toss the tomatoes.
I have some experience with HD in the field, and it seems to me that really you need to drive it linearly to get the right performance, because that's how it was designed. It wasn't expecting there to be any coding on the STL feeding the transmitter site. It didn't expect there to be any coding on the source material.
Right.
So we need to do our part to eliminate some of the compression. And it's easier than ever to get the bandwidth you need to make these links. I think there shouldn't be any limit there. And if people are feeling a limit, look around a little bit. I think there'll be some presentations here at the clinic that talk about ways to get much higher bandwidth links from point A to point B. Maybe we'll be left with the problem of the source material, which has been the case for our business forever.
Yeah, but we just have to keep chipping away at it.
Push back.
Exactly. If enough of us push back, they'll start listening. Okay, thank you. And I've got plenty of clips, so just come by the booth, and I'm happy to give them out and start our revolution. Thank you very much.